as he inquired, how do you pay for it?
Okay, so welcome. I want to, before we start, just put out gratitude for this beautiful Amamutsan land that we're on right now, in honor of the Yupi, a group of indigenous people who lived right here in the downtown area, and the Ohlone people, just honoring the place that we're at this point right now. I also want to welcome us by reading something by Pascal Auclair. It's a welcome to all. Regardless of your heritage, skin color, mother tongue, or history of your people, know that you are welcome. Whatever gender expression, or non-gender self-expression is with or how you love, know that you are welcome. Regardless of your age, body size, or shape, or physical abilities, know that you are welcome. No matter your health history, your mental or physical health, your economic status, your religious beliefs, or lack thereof, know that you're welcome here. So please know that all of you, every aspect of you, is welcome here tonight. My name is Shane Hill, and I'm one of the community facilitators here at Insight Santa Cruz. I'm also a clinical psychologist, and tonight it will be really a wedding between Buddhist psychology and Western psychology, mostly Vipassana practices, but also some Mahayana practices as well. I've studied both Vipassana and Tibetan practices, so there'll be a little bit of blending tonight. So hopefully you will be getting something a little bit different than what you normally would get, something potentially new for all of us. And I am so excited. There's so many people here tonight. So I had a feeling, so I had to switch rooms just in case. Can you imagine if you were in there? Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm very happy to see all of you here. I mean, this is a topic, right, emotional suffering that all of us deal with. Before I get into an overview of what I'll be doing over the next four meetings, if you're going to be coming to all of them, and what I'll be doing tonight, I want to just go around and just get a sense of, and I want you to have a sense of who's here. So this has to go very quick because there's so many of us. So I'm going to say, just say your name and pronouns if you'd like to say them. Lastly, really just one word that would say what you're dealing with emotionally right now in your life or nowadays. Something like depression, anxiety, fear, or potentially a subject like a relative that's difficult. Oh, can't say that's not one word. relative or difficult person. One or two words, let's say that. but no more. And there's a reason for that, actually. It's not just because of time. One of the pieces I'll be working on with you is to stop telling our stories. They're truly not helpful. So simply noticing the topic, and then we're going to do something with that. You can also say, like, divorce or loss or breakup or whatnot. Okay, so I'll go first, and we're going to go around this way. So Shane Hill, he, him, and fear. Okay, well, as you can see from what everyone has said, we are not alone. All of us have suffering. And the depth and the beauty and the vulnerability in this room is palpable, I'm sure, for most of us. So I would like to go over the overview of the series of meetings. So tonight we will be talking about trauma-sensitive practice and heart-awakening practices. Next week, next Thursday, I will be talking about depressive states and depression. 2 weeks later, in the third meeting, will be on fear and anxiety. And the final one, 2 weeks later, will be on self-compassion. And I did leave the self-compassion for last because I find it to be one of the most difficult for us all to do. And I wanted to give you time to prepare and get used to each other and practicing together, and for us to have as safe a space as possible for that to occur. All right, so I want to start by saying that really, these classes are built upon the Satipatthana Sutta, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which that contains, speaks about, particularly the mindfulness of the body. I will be focusing a lot on mindfulness of the body, as well as on the mindfulness of mind states and mind objects. Definitely the five hindrances, desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. And I'll also be focusing on the seven factors of enlightenment, particularly mindfulness, investigation, and energy and effort. In our daily lives, normally we are focused on the content of our thoughts and mind states, and meditation, of course, really helps us move away from the mind, from the conceptual mind, and ideally we're becoming more and more mindful and coming from a place of mindfulness of the body. And this really does help to move away from the story that we oftentimes have, the narrative that our egoic conceptual mind creates about reality, about the facts of the situation. And I will be talking much more about this later on, but know that I will always help to support you to move away from the interpretations that you make about what has occurred to you or what is occurring, and going with your direct experience of it. So, and mindfulness of the body is key to this. And working with trauma, body is key. Body is more right hemispheric. It has it has the ability with our senses to have a direct experience of reality, rather than the conceptual mind. Once we take in an experience and experience it with the body, then our mind takes it and interprets it. And then our experience of the event has this overlay of what we thought about it, all of our history, all the associations we have of it. Whereas the body itself, if you just go with direct experience, it's much more doable. The body also houses trauma, or what's also called unlived experience. The definition of trauma really is an experience that we have where we do not have the capacity to experience all of it. It's just too much. It overwhelms our mind and our system, and we oftentimes will move away from it, cut off portions of it, but the body still remembers all of it. It really is a storehouse for everything that we experience. And when we're meditating, it can happen that trauma or unlived experiences, or experiences that you have not allowed yourself to fully experience, can come up. Not that they will come up, but they can come up. And so meditation really does help move us away from the left hemispheric analytical mind to our direct experiences, as I said before. And a very profound TED Talk on this, if you haven't seen it or not, is Jill Bolte Taylor's Stroke of Insight TED Talk. Again, that's Jill Bolte Taylor, and it is called Stroke of Insight. Jill Bolte Taylor is a brain researcher who has a stroke on her left hemisphere, so that she loses her conceptual mind and only has direct experience for periods of time. And what she reports is a dramatic and amazing experience that we hear the master meditators and sages through the eons talk about, these experiences where we are larger than the physical body, where there's no true boundary between us and other people, where we have an expansion in consciousness that is unbelievable compared to what we experience in this tight little body that we feel we are only at this time. So I do recommend checking that out if you haven't seen that already. Again, for those who have trauma, we all have some level of trauma, but there are people, I'm sure, here tonight where you are experiencing what I would call classic trauma from our social mores, or the way we tend to talk about that word in our culture, where you've had an experience of abuse or sexual trauma or something that has occurred that is, or an accident of some sort, where you're having flashbacks, you're having PTSD types of symptoms, when that occurs, meditation can be very tricky. And so because of that, I really want to talk about the five principles of trauma-sensitive mindfulness. And I'm taking these principles from this book called Trauma-Sensitive Mindfulness by David Terlevin. And I would recommend getting this if you'd like to read more about this, these concepts that I'll be presenting right now. So the first principle of trauma-sensitive mindfulness is to stay within your window of tolerance. And this is really talking about our autonomic nervous system tolerance. So I often visualize this where there's this band in the middle, and that's our window of tolerance. And above the band is our hypoarousal zone, and below that band is our hypoarousal zone. Hypo being, you know, very little arousal or too little arousal, really. Whereas above that is too much arousal. And if you have too much arousal, if you're overwhelmed in that way, I find most people can tell that's occurring, but not always. But that's when you're having too much sensation, potentially too much emotional reactivity, potentially too much intrusive imagery, disorganized thinking. It's where you're hyperstimulus. You're having too much stimulation in the body. And that's really where your sympathetic nervous system is active and you're in fight or flight mode. I'm sure you probably have heard of fight, flight, or freeze. And this is when we're in a difficult situation and we are scared and or threatened. Oftentimes, our autonomic nervous system will put us into fight or flight response, which means we're going to fight or flight, leave the situation. Because we're hyper-aroused in that mode. Ideally, below that is our window of tolerance, where we actually have the parasympathetic system is more active, where we're alert, but we're very relaxed. There's a way where that's where meditation is ideally at. And this is also where the ventral vagal social engagement response is said to be, where we have the ability to be socially engaged, where we can look people in the eye, have social contact, and connect with people in a deep manner. Below that is hypoarousal zone. This is when potentially we've been threatened, something is too much, and we're most likely unable to fight or leave, and so we go into freeze mode. And that is the dorsal branch of the parasympathetic nervous system. And we basically freeze and become immobilized. You probably know this from animals that will, you know, fake dead type of thing, where they become immobilized in order to survive. And if you're in this state, oftentimes you can have numbness of the body or emotions, fogginess in the brain, reduced physical movement. Oftentimes the muscle tension is very lax, like you have very little tension in the body anymore. Might be even hard to hold your posture up. This is too little arousal. So you want to basically try to stay within your window of tolerance, where you're not too aroused or too little, but you're, you know, just in that window of tolerance, good area for alertness, and you have capacity to handle what's arising. So if you're in meditation and something arises that is just too much, notice what occurs for you. Notice whether you're having to get away from it, or whether you actually become foggy and or distant or dissociated from it, essentially. I know that for myself, when I first started meditating, for the first, I would say, 2 to 3 years of meditation, unbeknownst to me at the time, but later on it became obvious to me that I was checked out, that I was dissociated. I was having great meditations. They were easy for me, phenomenal. I was just spaced out. I just had no idea that I wasn't actually being fully present. And one of the main ways that you can tell whether or not you are present or not is to notice whether or not you do have a clear sense of what's occurring in the present moment for yourself physically, emotionally, and thoughts, that you are present to what's going on. The next principle is to shift your attention to support stability. So if you are out of your window of tolerance, if you're having too much of something, you're overstimulated, or you've gone away, or you're just in freeze mode and understimulated, you want to do something to get yourself back. You want to avoid the kind of fight, flight, or freeze modes. So to do that, you want to find certain anchors that actually really work for you. Now, it's possible that the breath does work for you. If it does, awesome. That's what we use mainly here in Vipassana. It's really good for a lot of people, but it might not be. So if going inside all of a sudden is too much, or what's coming up for you, what is arising in the moment is too much, then you might want to consider briefly at least moving your attention elsewhere. One of the ways to easily do that right away is to simply move it from inside your body, outside your body. So if you're a person that closes your eyes when you're meditating, you can simply open them and look down at the floor in a very soft gaze. And that might be enough right there to orient you back to the present, to tolerate whatever is arising. Something as simple as that. If you are dealing with classical trauma, what you would say is, I'm dealing with trauma, as we talk about that in our culture, then you might also want to work with a meditation teacher or with even a trauma specialist. There's lots of people like that in town, and I can refer you if you need that. You can always talk to me afterwards. But if you're having a hard time with this on your own, then that would be a good place to start as well. Okay, the third principle is keeping the body in mind. So especially if you're working with dissociation, there's a difference between, as I said, how we orient internally, and that is interoceptive sensations, and then there's also extraceptive sensations. So the internal ones are, you know, am I feeling warm or hot? Am I feeling tense or relaxed? Am I even feeling emotionally safe would be even part of that. The external ones are how we feel like with our environment. So is this water going to be warm enough or cold enough for me to put my hand into? Is it windy or not out here? Is this a safe room to be in? So that, all of those pieces. And so if you are dealing with dissociation, it might be helpful for you to notice what you're attending to. Are you attending internally or externally? And then switching that channel if you need to. Oftentimes, when we are dealing with trauma, those two areas of focus don't match up well. So let's say you're here meditating, and externally, it seems like everything is very safe and everything is going well. But when you focus inward, it does not feel safe. And that can be very confusing, right? I do not feel safe in this moment here, and yet when I look outside, it seems like a safe environment. And so when those two things do not match up well, then we can easily get confused. We can, over time, we can even hit despair because things are not working for us. And so that's another place to look at to kind of switch things up in what we're doing. So I want to give you now a list of just lots of practice suggestions to change orientation in the moment. So first of all, of course, watch for signs of dissociation. If you're too relaxed, you feel nothing at all, if you're in a fog or a daydream, know that you're outside your window of tolerance. Again, watch for overstimulation or overwhelm, racing thoughts, hyperventilation, too much. And then know that you have choices in that moment. So even if a meditation teacher is guiding you to do something very specific, if it's not working for you, do something else. So one thing you could do is you could begin to incorporate movement in your practice, for instance. So you could just move your hand from your leg, if that's what's resting, just to your heart. And just let yourself feel, oh, I need to find compassion, or I need to feel myself inside my chest right now. You can also press your hands actually into your legs to ground yourself into pressure. Some people find pressure on the body to be very orienting. What this is about is you want to find something that helps to stabilize you. That's all that you're wanting to do in these types of practices. Again, you can use extraceptive sensations. So you can focus on a sensation on the cushion of the floor, so outside of your body. You can touch the cushion itself. You can focus visually on an external object in the environment. So you can focus on the person above, ahead of you. You can focus on the teacher. You can focus on the Buddha. You can also start to do sound meditation. So I gave you those as options in the beginning, as opposed to simply breath, for this exact reason. I want you to technically choose what's really best for you. And sound meditation can be a really good one, by the way. You can change your body posture. You can stand up and meditate standing up. You can lie down. If it's easily possible, you can do walking meditation instead. Let's say you all of a sudden, the breakup that you've been going through starts to come through your system and you're getting overwhelmed and you just feel so much energy in your body you have to move. You might want to just very gently walk up and go into the foyer here and do walking meditation for a while until you might settle down, then come back and then sit and come back down and sit. You can even just use the breath alone in very subtle ways. So if you have too much energy, you can begin to put more of a focus on the exhale, because that is what actually promotes the parasympathetic system to be activated. So take a much slower exhale, doing that for a while, and not spending so much time on the inhale. And the opposite is also true. Let's say you're starting to dissociate and become numb. You can actually quicken your breath slightly, make it a little bit more rapid, and then also really focus on the inhale, which technically does increase the sympathetic system to actually energize you a little bit. Those are very subtle things to try maybe first. If you're at home doing this, you can try shorter practice periods. You can actually just take a break to stop. Even if you're in the meditation hall, just take a break and just sit and distract yourself for a while in your mind, and then come back if you need to. But you can also call use what's called a safe reliance cue. This is actually an image, a visual image, either of someone that you love and you know comforts you, and just the image of them in your mind will bring some comfort to you. Or it could be a pet, or it could even be a place that all of a sudden you just know, I just need to go there for a few minutes, and then I'll come back to what's arising now. If you are dealing with trauma, it is good to be cautious with body scans. So I love body scans. They can be amazing. But sometimes we realize that there's certain parts of the body that it's just too difficult to go there. And so you can omit them, or you can simply omit the whole body scan if that's easier for you. And lastly, you can also sit towards the doorway or towards the exit. Sometimes people just feel a lot of relief in knowing, you know, I'm just this far away from the door. And I can always leave if I need to. So if you notice, these are all these ways where you can switch up what's happening in the moment so that you can begin to bring yourself back. And so you want to do whatever is good for you in the moment until you find yourself back in your window of tolerance when the symptoms in your body come back online, and then you come back to whatever the standard meditation is if it feels right to you. Okay, so there's those. The fourth principle is practice in relationship. Although I think I should take a moment. Are there any questions at this point? I've given you a lot of information so far quickly. No? Okay. The fourth principle is practice in relationship. So when you're in the window of tolerance, we actually have the ability to have eye contact and to be socially engaged. So that's another way you can notice, by the way. If you are overwhelmed or traumatized, it's sometimes hard to actually look people in the eyes. It's just too difficult to do. So what you can do is to bring yourself back to your window of tolerance, you can see if you can do some of that. So it might be easier to do when you know no one's going to be looking at you. So you can open up your eyes, and you can actually just look around the room and see if you can kind of energetically connect with people with your gaze. If you found that the meditation was really triggering for you afterwards, if you can, try to engage with someone that you feel comfortable with. Because social engagement itself almost always brings us back to a window of tolerance, where it can. Not always, but it can. On retreat, noble silence can really make this difficult. So for people that really need that social contact and they're in noble silence, it can really bring things up. So you can talk to meditation teachers there to see if you can have check-ins with them maybe more regularly if you're dealing with trauma. You can also potentially have a creative solution, which is to have a meditation buddy, where you actually check in with someone that's not the meditation teacher, with the meditation teacher's knowledge, if possible, where you can check in with someone and socially engage when things are getting too much. And then lastly, with regard to relationship, you can also just be more in relationship with yourself in the moment and do self-talk. This can be in just languaging you're using around, okay, this part of me is being really traumatized and this part of me is not, and just having this conflict in the moment, you can begin to have some inner dialogue. But there's actually a very specific practice which David Trevelyan promotes, and it's called the Flashback Halting Protocol. And I have copies for everyone. And believe it or not, I actually think I have enough copies for everyone, which is amazing. So I'm just going to read this to you, and then later on, well, I'll hand this out. So the Flashback Protocol, what it is it's a way for you to talk to yourself in a way that brings you back to the present moment. So it says, these are all, it's basically a paragraph with blanks. So the first part says, right now I'm feeling blank. So it's right now I'm feeling fear, most likely would be what would be happening. And I'm sensing in my body blank. And I'm sensing in my body tenseness in my throat, heartbeat, and I feel tingly everywhere. It would be maybe the three sensations. Because I'm remembering blank, and again, this is not the story, this is just a one-word label. I'm remembering the accident, or I'm remembering that night. At the same time, I'm looking around where I'm at now, it's the current year, in 2020, and I can see blank, other people in my environment in the meditation hall, or I can see my dog here in the corner if you're at home, and so I know blank. The accident is not happening anymore. So again, if I do read the whole thing to myself, right now I'm feeling fearful. I'm sensing tingling in my body and tightness in my throat and racing thoughts because I'm remembering the accident. At the same time, I'm looking around and I see that there's other people here in the meditation hall. It's 2020. And so I know that the accident is not happening right now. So it's a way of actually bringing yourself back to the present moment. And this is helpful, especially for flashbacks, right? If you're dealing with a flashback of a trauma, to bring yourself back to what's actually occurring now. But there's times when we need this when we're fighting with our partner at home. And we feel like what they're doing is, I cannot deal with this anymore. It's driving me nuts. If you know yourself well enough, you've done enough work, you can realize, oh, this is actually related to something potentially not even dealing with my partner. I know that I have this way of this traumatic response or this triggering response, and you can begin to say, no, this is not my mother or my father or whoever it was originally. It is my partner. I actually know they love me, even though they're being an asshole right now. And you know, I'm an adult. I have these skills, and so you can bring yourself back to the present moment. Okay. Okay, and I'll be handing this out a little bit later. The last and final principle is to understand the social context. And this is the social context for you. So to acknowledge your unique family history around whatever it is that you're dealing with and why you might be vulnerable to it. Knowing your own family or your own personal history of trauma or the last four relationships you've had that all have this one component that's showing up again. People that are minority status groups, people that are oppressed and or targeted groups in our society as opposed to more privileged, there's even more of this that goes on that you want to take into consideration. Because I'm a gay person or a trans person or a person of color, I have to deal with way more of this, and this is what I'm dealing with now as well. It can help you to bring in more compassion to remember your history and why, of course, I'm having this reaction right now. It could also be even something where, you know, I'm having all this anger come up right now, and anger was not allowed in my family, and I cannot believe that I'm having to go through this. It's too much. So this is where the last class, right, self-compassion and metta is going to be so helpful. And with everything that we're going to be doing over these next 4 weeks, you always want to bring in metta or compassion if you can. And if you can't bring in compassion, because sometimes we simply can't, it's helpful to bring in simply just to notice the desire that you want to have compassion. Even that alone can help you to move in those ways in the moment. Okay. So that was all the information on how to switch up things for trauma. So I wanted to open up for a little bit of question and answer and or just comments on how does this feel to you? What is this bringing up for you? Does this seem like too much? Or like I can't do this? know that today really is going to be about you finding, and the meditation in particular is going to be about you finding what are the ways where I can de-escalate myself and bring myself back to a stabilized place more easily than others. And you might have something already that works for you, but I want you to have several, and I want you to also know which one actually works the best. So with that, I'm going to turn off this recording. The bodhicitta type of meditation where we are going to kind of awaken the heart in a somatic way. And bodhicitta, if you're not familiar with that term, citta is translated in English as either mind or heart. In fact, it's the same word originally in Sanskrit. And it's kind of a shame that we've translated as mind, because that culture really was talking about direct experience, which you have from the body. Mm-hmm. And so part of what I'll talk to you about, too, I want you to have an experience of what is it like to experience reality from here as opposed to from here. That's the ideal. Rather from your mind, but actually from your direct experience from the body. And so having a heart-opening practice really helps with metta and loving-kindness, of course, but also allows you to have just more of an experience of direct experience of reality. So the last portion will be around that. Okay. So just go ahead and allow yourself to sink into a meditation posture more deeply. Feeling your connection with the cushion or the chair or the floor. Feeling free to be sitting or standing or lying down. Allowing yourself to focus on the pelvis if you're sitting, and allowing your spine to very slowly, vertebra by vertebra, rise up from that stable base, putting one vertebra on top of the other, moving up through the spinal column, all the way up to the neck, and lengthening the back of the neck. Sometimes it's helpful to put the chin down slightly and to move the ears back a little bit over the shoulders. But I want you to use the interoceptive sensations, your internal sensations, to feel what feels like a centered place for your spine and your body. Allowing the posture to be erect, but not rigid. It needs to also be relaxed enough. You have to be rigid enough to hold the posture, but ideally relaxing the muscles around the spine. And now just notice what your body is feeling like. Doing a brief scan of the body, if that feels okay for you. Now we are going to be doing a variety of anchors to see which things provide you the most amount of calm or peace or stability. So I want you just to notice what it's like first to focus on the breath. Noticing the most prominent aspect of your breath, breathing process. Anywhere from the nostrils, the throat, the chest, or all the way down to the lower belly. Whatever aspect is most prominent. And as you're focusing on the breath, I want you to expand your awareness to simultaneously notice the rest of the body. And just notice how tense or relaxed you are in general. How safe do you feel right now on a scale from 1 to 10? We're thinking window of tolerance here. So 5 would be perfect. 10 would be too aroused. 1 would be too relaxed or dissociated, really. Too out of it. 5 is just right. As you focus on the breath, just notice where you might be on that scale and just note that. And if the scale does not work for you, just notice how relaxed you are or how safe and stable you feel right now as you focus on the breath. Now we're going to change our focus to sound. Noticing in the sounds in this room. Noticing the sounds outside of this room. And potentially also the sounds within your own body. Just allowing sound to be your anchor at this time. Sound meditation can be so helpful when the breath is not the best choice. Notice how it might be different. Notice how much of stability or groundedness you feel on that 10-point scale or just in general using sound. Now, changing our focus to body sensation, allowing yourself to have the anchor of any sensation in the body, whether that's heat or coolness, tension or relaxation of muscles or areas, potentially pain or not having pain, movement, vibration. Just noticing whatever sensation is most prominent, finding something there. And just allowing that to be the focus of your meditation at this time. Seeing how this anchor is for you. Again, using that 10-point scale, or just a general sense of how stable or calm this anchor was for you. And now, allowing yourself to choose any of those new practice suggestions I mentioned before as your anchor or focus, or way of stabilizing or finding a place of peace and groundedness inside yourself or outside yourself in your experience. So you can use pressure of your hands into your legs, or changing your breath slightly on the inhale and the exhale, potentially using that safe reliance cue of an image of someone or a pet who comforts you or makes you feel peaceful and loved inside. Changing your body posture or putting your hand on your heart, any of those other new ways of potentially grounding yourself. Try one of those. Now, again, noticing on that 10-point scale, if you'd like to use that, or just in a general sense of how this worked for you to provide more stability or a sense of peace. Now I'd like you to bring a difficulty to mind, whether it's the difficulty that you said you were working with in your life in the beginning when we went around with the sharing, or whether it's something else arising in the present moment now, or just anything else that would be, that would bring up some tension or something difficult to think about. And as you do bring that up, notice how your body shifts. Notice what sensations arise when you think about this difficulty. Now, allow your focus to move to whichever anchor you found to be most helpful, or one or two of them, it's up to you. But move to that other anchor now with your focus, whether it's the breath, whether it's sound, or body sensation, or a different one that you chose on your own. Allow your focused attention to be there at this time now. Noticing how the sensations are, how you're feeling about your body at this time, to see if it's coming back to a place of stability and groundedness. noticing on that 10-point scale, if you're using that, where you're at this time. And then going back now to the difficult thought again, one last time. Seeing how the body shifts, or your experience internally shifts as you think about that difficulty again. Giving yourself that rating on the 10-point scale, or just noticing in general how that is for you, sensationally, the sensations in the body. And then finally moving back, you might want to try a different anchor this time to see how that goes. Again, whether it's the breath, or body sensation, or sound, or one of the other unique practice methods you chose. Seeing how this one works compared to the last one. Now moving into the last part of our meditation practice for tonight. I'm going to be doing some work on opening up and awakening your heart. So just now allowing the focus of your attention to be placed in the middle of your chest or the heart area. And just for now on the outside edge of that. So on the outside of the outer layer of your chest or heart space. Just notice what you feel in that area. Do you feel tension, or pressure, relaxedness, numbness? What do you feel on the outer edge, the outer layer of your chest area or heart? Noticing any sensations in that area. Free to use your breath to kind of breathe into that area if you'd like. And then even more as you expand your chest, for instance. And now moving farther, deeper in, move into the middle of your chest, or the middle of your heart or heart space, and see how the sensations might be different in the middle part of your body. Now moving all the way back to the farthest back area of your chest, all the way back towards the spine, towards the back, the back of your heart space or heart. See how it feels there. Noticing sensations, noticing any emotions that may be coming up, if at all. And now notice the whole chest area, the whole heart space or heart area, however you're sensing into your body in that place. Just notice all the physical sensations and any emotions that might be arising This is where we tend to feel our emotions more often. Place of direct experience of reality. And I'd like you now to see if you can find in the middle part any space. See if you can find any space or emptiness in that area. You can even imagine kind of allowing all the tension or any blockages or anything that might be in your heart or your chest to kind of move out towards the outer edges of it, providing more space for you inside to experience. Don't worry if you can't imagine this or experience it directly. But using your direct experience or your imagination, see if you can create a feeling of more expansion or space inside. And then within that, see if you can find any warmth. This is the space where often we can find warmth for ourselves, kindness for ourselves, loving kindness for ourselves. See if you can experience any type of physical warmth, any emotional warmth, any feelings of kindness in general. Allowing that warmth. And if you can't feel warmth or loving kindness for yourself inside, you can also just notice the desire for that. Just be with the desire to experience that or to have that. That itself helps you move in that direction somewhat. But if you can, even if you're just using your imagination, just imagine that warmth and that kindness moving out from your heart, moving out into the rest of your body, expanding from your chest out to every cell, every muscle, bone, organ, every part of your body, feeling more and more warmth, more and more kindness, loving kindness for yourself. Let's go ahead and take that out beyond our bodies, allowing that to move out into this whole space, into the meditation hall. Moving out from there, imagine it moving out into all of Santa Cruz. Moving out from there to the entire state of California, to the United States, and then moving out to the entire planet and even beyond, allowing our loving kindness to move to every being and every particle, molecule in all of existence, touching every being, leaving no being left behind. Thank you. Oh, thank you, all of you, for coming out to practice tonight together. I would like to invite you to do a practice of allowing this open heart space practice to be part of each day for a little while, potentially each day until we meet next. I found that this heart opening practice can be quite vulnerable. It can bring up a lot. For some people, it simply opens up your expansion of your emotions. For those of us who don't feel our emotions very much, it can be very wonderful to just have more access to our emotional life. For others, where you have too much that kind of happens emotionally, or if something does arise that's a lot, know that you can stop doing it every day, you can take breaks, but it is a way that you can begin to start to experience reality more directly from the heart, from the body, being more open to the world. But do have wise judgment, so do it. I would suggest doing it every day if you can for 5 or 10 minutes, adding that to your daily practice if you have that. However, if you do it for 3 days in a row and it feels like, oh, I'm just getting too weepy, I'm just getting too emotional or vulnerable, which definitely was my experience when I did this for the first time, I just took a break for a few days, and then I came back to it. And I add it to my practice whenever I want to allow something to arise more fully or just feels like the right thing to do at that time. So this is an invitation for you. And before we leave tonight, I also want all of you to have space to state something that might have come up for you, to be able to ask questions, to make comments, to share with each other as a Sangha, anything you'd like to tonight. And of course, feel free to ask me any questions as well about anything in the Dharma talk or in the meditation or just anything in general. This space is now open for all of you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.